Imagine you are 6,000 feet over rolling farm country, halfway through a cross country. The engine has been singing all morning, and then it changes. It is subtle at first. A little shudder, a slight drop in RPM. Maybe the cylinder head temps shifting in a way they should not be. You're not sure if something is wrong or if you're imagining it. That moment right there. That is one of the most dangerous moments in general aviation. Not because the engine is definitely failing, but because you do not know what is happening yet, and what you decide in the next 60 seconds can determine how the rest of that flight goes. I am Pattern, and this is Traffic Pattern on Radio Hangar. Today we are talking about engine roughness in flight, the troubleshooting sequence, what it looks like in the real world, and how to stay ahead of a situation that can escalate fast if you let it. Before we get into it, a quick word from our friends at AviationSoul.com. They make challenge coins for pilots. First solo, private cert, instrument rating, commercial. Each one marks a real milestone that took real work, and these coins are a great way to carry those moments with you and share them with people who get it. Check them out at AviationSoul.com. All right. Engine roughness. Here is something I wish someone told me when I was training. There is a meaningful difference between an engine that has quit and an engine that is running rough. A full engine failure is, in some ways, easier to manage. The engine stops, you establish best glide, you run your emergency checklist, you pick a field. The situation is defined and the decision is made for you. Engine roughness is harder, because the engine is still running, you are still making power. But something is off, and you do not know exactly what, and that ambiguity tempts you to do nothing, to wait, to hope it goes away. The accident record is full of flights where the pilot waited too long. So let us talk about what to do the moment you notice something is not right. The first step is mental, and it is the most important one. Acknowledge it. Do not dismiss it. If the engine sounds different, if the RPM is fluctuating, if you are seeing instrument readings that are unusual, your brain is telling you something for a reason. Trust that signal. Say it out loud if you have to. Something is not right immediately without hesitation. Trim the aircraft for best glide speed. Look this number up in your pilot's operating handbook before you ever need it. Every aircraft is different. The Cessna 172 has a published best glide of 65 knots. The Piper Cherokee is 73 knots. Know your number cold. Trimming for best glide costs you nothing if the engine turns out to be fine. But if it deteriorates into a full engine failure while you're troubleshooting, you're already set up for maximum range. You do not want to be recalling that number while simultaneously managing a dying engine. Know it before you go. At the same time, start thinking about where you would go right now if the engine went silent. That is a question you should honestly be running in the background on every flight. When roughness starts, move it to the foreground. Identify your best option. A highway, a farm field, a paved strip. You do not have to commit to it yet, but know where it is. Now, let us talk about the checklist. Most pilots' operating handbooks include an engine roughness or partial power loss checklist. Know yours. Broadly, here is what you're working through. Fuel ignition, mixture, induction, carburetor heat. If your aircraft has a carburetor, start with fuel. Check that your fuel selector is on the fullest tank. You would be surprised how often roughness events trace back to a fuel selector that was accidentally bumped, or a pilot who started a long cross-country on one tank and forgot to switch. Some aircraft have fuel selectors that are easy to knock with a knee or a flight bag. If you're on a left or right tank, switch to the fullest one. Some aircraft have a both position. Know whether your specific aircraft prefers one tank at a time or tolerates both simultaneously, the handbook will tell you. While we are on fuel, a brief word about vapor lock. This is more common in hot weather or after a hot soak on the ramp, and it occurs when fuel boils in the fuel line before it reaches the carburetor or injector. The symptom is often a smooth engine that suddenly starts running rough or surging. On carbureted aircraft, vapor lock can sometimes be managed by enriching the mixture and increasing airflow through cooling. On fuel-injected engines, you may need to switch tanks and cycle the boost pump. The point is that fuel system issues take several different forms. The checklist sequence is designed to work through all of them systematically. Next, check your mixture. At altitude, a mixture that is too rich can cause roughness and lost power. But the more common culprit in a roughness event is actually a mixture that has gone lean without you fully noticing. Density altitude changes, shifting winds, gradual fuel system issues. Try enriching the mixture a small amount and see what the engine does. If you have an engine monitor or an exhaust gas temperature gauge, use it. Lean or enrich methodically based on what the gauge is telling you. Magnetos. Switch to the left, magneto only, listen and watch the RPM, then to the right only, then back to both. A normal magneto check on the ground produces a drop, usually no more than 125 RPM on most training aircraft, with a differential between mags of no more than 50 RPM. In the air, if one magneto causes a severe drop or a near complete cutout, you have a magneto problem. Stay on the healthy mag. You lose some power, but you keep flying. A fouled spark plug can cause intermittent roughness that clears with careful leaning. If you have been flying for a long time at rich mixture and reduced power settings, carbon fouling on a plug is actually fairly common. The remedy is to lean aggressively for a minute or two, then ease the mixture back. Sometimes that clears a fouled plug and the engine smooths right out. Now, carburetor heat. This one gets its own moment because it behaves counterintuitively and because it matters so much. Carburetor ice forms inside the throat of the carb when moist air expands rapidly and the temperature drops sharply. It can form on clear, warm days. It commonly appears at cruise power settings, not just at low power during descent. When you apply carb heat to a carburetor that has icing, the immediate result is often more roughness or a drop in RPM as the ice melts and passes through the engine. This is normal. Do not panic. Keep the heat on. After 30 to 60 seconds, the RPM should stabilize and then climb back to normal. If that is what happens, you had carb ice. Leave the heat on. Do not cycle carb heat on and off rapidly. Apply it, give it time, and assess. Rapid cycling can partially melt ice and then allow it to refreeze in a worse configuration. If your aircraft is fuel injected, carb heat does not apply to you, but check your alternate air setting. If there is an obstruction in the induction system, an ice buildup near the air filter intake, alternate air bypasses the filter and can restore smooth operation. One more item, the primer. Check that it is fully seated and locked. An unlocked primer allows unmetered fuel to be drawn into the intake manifold, which causes a rich roughness that mimics almost everything else on this list. Lock it down. Throughout all of this, your primary job is to fly the airplane. The temptation when something goes wrong is to drop your head into the cockpit and stare at the gauges. Do not do that. Look outside. Maintain control. Keep that best glide speed trimmed in. Keep tracking your best landing option below you. The airman certification standards make this explicit. The examiner wants to see you prioritize aircraft control above everything else during an emergency or abnormal situation. Aviate first, navigate second, communicate third. That priority order exists because pilots have died getting it reversed. Let us talk about communication. This is where a lot of student pilots hesitate, and I want to address it directly. Declaring an emergency is not a shameful act. It is not an admission of failure. It is a resource. The moment you have real uncertainty about the health of your engine, you should be getting someone in the loop. 7700 on the transponder is the emergency squawk code. Squawking 7700 immediately alerts the radar system and tells the controller that you have a problem. You do not have to have the whole story ready, just squawk it, and they will come to you. If you're not in contact with anyone, try guard frequency 121.5. If you're already talking to a controller, say it simply, Mayday, 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 then your call sign. Then engine roughness and that you are requesting assistance. That is it. You do not need a polished explanation. You need help. Some pilots hesitate because they do not want the paperwork, or because they feel embarrassed if it turns out to be nothing. Here is the reality. There is no penalty for a Mayday call that resolves uneventfully. ATC will not file anything against your certificate. The system is designed for this exact use, and if you keep troubleshooting quietly while the engine degrades, the consequences of not having declared are far worse than any awkward radio call. Declare early. Declare clearly. Keep your options open. Now the judgment call that the ACS specifically asks about, continue or divert. You have run through your checklist. The engine is still running. Maybe slightly rough, maybe smoothed out. What do you do? Here is a framework I find useful. Ask yourself two questions. First, do I know what caused this? If you applied carb heat and the roughness cleared completely over 60 seconds, you probably know what happened. Carb ice. You can make an informed decision with that knowledge. If the roughness came and went with no clear connection to any checklist item, that is a different situation. Unknown causes mean unknown reliability. Second, am I comfortable getting back into this situation if it happens again in the next 20 minutes? Are you flying over terrain that gives you good emergency options, or are you heading toward mountains or water or dense urban areas where those options narrow? The field below you right now might not be there in 10 miles. If you do not know what caused it, or if your options are about to get worse, land now. Every airport you overfly is an option you're permanently giving up. Let us walk through a realistic scenario. You are flying a Piper Warrior at 8,500 feet, cross-country, relatively flat terrain below. You notice a 30 to 50 RPM oscillation and a subtle vibration you can feel through the seat. You immediately trim for 73 knots, the Warrior's best glide. You identify a private strip about 8 miles to your south. You do not commit to it yet, but you know it is there. You run the checklist. Fuel selector on fullest tank, mixture appropriate for altitude. Carb heat on. You wait after about 45 seconds. The roughness clears, and RPM climbs back to normal. Classic carb ice response. You leave the carb heat on. Monitor for 2 minutes, then ease it off. Slowly, the engine stays smooth. Now the question. 30 more miles to your destination. Do you continue? The right answer depends on context. If you have solid confidence it was carb ice, if the terrain stays friendly, and if you commit to monitoring closely, continuing is defensible. You know to apply intermittent carb heat, you know the warning signs. But if the roughness comes back even slightly, you divert immediately. No negotiating with yourself, no one more mile thinking. Here is something I see students do wrong during checkride emergency scenarios. They run the checklist. The engine smooths out. They breathe a sigh of relief and they mentally exit emergency mode. The examiner is watching for sustained vigilance. The event is not over because the symptom cleared. You stay alert. You keep your landing options visible. You're not done managing that situation until the wheels are on the ground. One more topic I want to cover. Engine roughness at night. Nighttime roughness is a different experience than daytime roughness, and I want pilots who fly after dark to understand why. In the daytime, you can see the terrain below you. You can see the farm fields and the roads and the airport beacon. At night, all of that visual reference is reduced or gone entirely. Your awareness of position, nearest airports, and terrain clearance becomes more critical the moment the sun goes down. If you fly at night regularly, and I do encourage night flying, pull up your approach plates for airports along your route before you ever leave the ground. Know where the flat terrain is. Know your minimum safe altitudes. Pre-fly your emergency decision tree before you push the throttle forward, because if the engine goes rough at night over dark terrain, you have less time to think and the options are harder to see. Night VFR pilots should plan their emergencies in advance, every single flight. Let us bring it home. Engine roughness in flight does not get the dramatic attention of a bird strike or a door popping open. But it kills people who hesitated, it kills people who did not know their checklist, and it kills people who kept going when they should have landed. Know your best glide speed before you need it. Know your fuel selector and what position it needs to be in for your aircraft. Know your carb heat, know your magneto check procedure in the air. And know that declaring an emergency is a resource, not a defeat. Information for this segment comes from the FAA Airplane Flying Handbook, your aircraft's pilot's operating handbook, and the Private Pilot Airman Certification Standards. The POH is the authority for your specific aircraft. Read it, radiohangar.com. I am Pattern. Stay ahead of the airplane.